Welcome to the Body Grievers Club. Hi, my friends. I'm Bree.
And I'm Jana.
And we want to sit in the grief and the suck of your body image with you.
But we also want to show you that even in the suck, you can still live a great life in the body that you have right now.
And that no matter how big and how difficult your body grief feels,
you are not alone.
Hi, and welcome back to another episode of the Body Grievers Club. We are talking about a heavier topic, no pun intended. This is being released right before Valentine's Day. And so we wanted to have an episode talking about being in a larger body, fat love. And something that's come up in our community has been this idea of, my partner has said they are unattracted to me since I've gained weight. What do I do? When I talk about dating and romantic relationships, there's about four different people. You have the person who wants to be in a relationship but doesn't feel worthy of love. You also have people who I would put myself in this camp of, who want to love but don't want to do the work to get there. It has nothing to do with my like self view. So if that is you, I'm going to recommend you go listen to the episode that I did with Lily Womble on dating and body image. The episode is called Agency and Pleasure. That is going to be your jam. We look forward to making an episode on self-worth at some point, but that's not the episode for today. So you have your single people who are dating in those two camps, and then you have the people who are in committed relationships. And I would say there's two different kinds of people. You have people who have partners who love them, who love their body, and that person cannot fathom how in the world their partner loves them, either because of or in spite of their body. And then you also have people who have partners who have their anti-fat bias that is coming up in their relationship and maybe have communicated to them they don't feel attracted to you anymore because your body has changed. This is the episode for you.
This is such an important conversation to have because we want to really acknowledge that we have heard some horror stories. Dating, relationship, and body shame, these are real.
One of the things we wanted to start off with is that there is no universal definition of attraction.
Absolutely not. No universal definition of attraction. We have some cultural programming going on as to what beauty has been defined, especially in our country. In the United States, we have magazines, we have media, we have all these things that is putting out this definition of beauty that may or may not align with us, that may or may not be what we're representative of, and the different things to decide internally, mentally, what we're attracted to. Those are all having influence.
For people who are research-oriented, I encourage you to look up the Fiji study that was done by Ann Becker, who is a researcher who was studying eating disorders in Fiji. And one of the things that they noted was that up until they introduced media, that's when eating disorder behavior started to climb. We cannot talk about romantic love without also talking about the culture impact. I also want to acknowledge that, especially from a westernized beauty standard, a lot of times people will use preferences as code for fat phobia, that they'll say, I'm just not attracted to people in larger bodies. And what I will tell you is that that is not a preference. Right? That is just code for anti-fatness. I want to talk to the person who is listening to this, who says, my partner has expressed a loss of interest in me because of my body change, or my partner is no longer sexually intimate with me because my body has changed. Jenna, as a body image coach, is the first thing that you want to let them know?
The first thing I want to say just for this episode specifically is we want to both acknowledge our privilege, right? We are white, straight women who are dating, have dated straight men. So we cannot speak to other experiences. We acknowledge them. We validate them. We love other experiences, but this is our lived experiences.
And we invite you to give us resources to learn from other perspectives Jana and I both undergo supervision from other providers with people with those lived experiences. But for this episode, we are going to be talking about specifically from the male gaze.
So what we do know that as body image coaches, the problem is not your body. It's conditioning or beliefs around bodies that are like yours and the things that have been seen in society. So just because someone has judgment around your body doesn't mean that you have to have those same judgments.
I think that's so hard, Jana, because I think there's a confirmation bias. I can't imagine the shame or the rejection that comes when somebody is like, I'm no longer attracted to you because your body has changed. That would be confirming my deepest fear.
Absolutely. I've seen the same thing around intelligence. For people who maybe already don't feel like they're intelligent, when somebody confirms that, it is extra painful. But wow, if you have a really strong base that I am an intelligent, smart person, so even when somebody questions that, even though we might have some discomfort, we don't have to buy into that story that we're not smart enough.
It's like, if we don't have intelligence, does it mean the thing that we think it means? Or if we don't have the same intelligence that somebody else has, like I will be the first to tell you, you know, I've always kind of struggled in school, but things that came really easy to me were creativity. I didn't have to try at that. So if somebody were to question my creativity, I could dismiss that. I could be like, well, that's not true. But if somebody were to be like, well, you're a bad test taker, I already feel like a bad test taker. So there's that confirmation bias of, oh my gosh, you're confirming my deepest fear.
I think that just really leads where we put our value on ourselves.
So one of the things I want to talk about is that before we can even get into how do we address the partner in this situation, we have to first identify and explore our own beliefs around body size. And I wanted to talk a little bit about my experience in my own anti-fatness. I remember there was somebody who was in the media who's in a larger body, and everybody kept talking about how sexy they found this person. And I remember having a visceral reaction. And my visceral reaction was not, I agree, but this person's body scares me. Like, I don't find their body attractive. Then I used to get stuck there and I'd feel badly that I felt that way. And so then I would stay stuck in my own anti-fat bias. And that is not helpful. And so what I would encourage you to do is if you feel, oh my God, my partner must be right, let's explore that. Let's highlight what are the beliefs that you're holding around body size. What is the story you're telling yourself? We need to build awareness around our own anti-fat bias. If you don't find fat bodies attractive, why not? What stops you from believing that a body that is fat is unattractive? How do you feel about a body that is soft? How do you feel about a body that is not muscled and toned? How much exposure do you have to fat bodies? Can you separate your experience and your own bias from that of your partners?
That in and of itself can affect our relationships and how we perceive our partner feels about our bodies. Mm. Right? So I think like looking at that lens, what is my own anti-fat bias, can really provide some clarity in our relationships.
In the show notes, I'm going to include the Harvard bias weight test. I recommend taking your own anti-fatness examination. How do you feel about fat bodies? Because we cannot begin to unpack this, and we cannot protect ourselves from other people's beliefs if we still have our own beliefs.
Absolutely. Brie, you and I both talk about this a lot, about how body image requires us to shift our mental space, yes, our thinking, our thoughts, which then affect our feelings about our bodies. But it really starts with that mental programming, which starts a lot with cultural programming. And we talked a little bit about this at the beginning, is what have we been taught to believe about bodies? What have we been taught is attractive? What have we been taught is not attractive, right? And it has different meanings through the world. I know that one that comes to mind for me is leg hair. In our country, we've decided, yes, leg hair is not attractive on women specifically, yes, not acceptable. It needs to be gone, right? But there's other countries that embrace this, and it's not a problem. That's not considered part of the beauty standard, and they don't shave their legs, right?
Yes. So I've been on a mission to read books with fat main characters. A book that talks about this is a book called Shipwrecked by Olivia Dade. And the main character in that is European. And she doesn't believe that she needs to shave her legs. And she's the romantic lead. It does not impact her ability to secure a partner. And she's fat. But that's such a good example. The example for me, which we talked about, was I've traveled out of the country a couple of times. I've gone specifically, I went to Mexico and I went with people who were in smaller bodies than me. And I was hit on far more than my smaller counterparts.
Isn't that so interesting how your body didn't change, your location in the world changed, yeah, and you had a different experience?
Yeah. I remember saying like, wow, like, this is so nice. I'm getting hit on. And then by the end, I was getting annoyed because I was like, you don't know me. You know nothing about me. The only thing you see is my body. And that is enough for you to determine that you want to get to know me. And that really confirmed for me, that's not an important value for me. That if the only reason you're attracted to me is because of my body, this ain't it for me. I want someone to want me for my mind. I want somebody to see me for all of the things that I am. And I don't want my body to be the consolation, but I think this is really where we have to kind of explore our own definition of attraction. Do you remember the first time that anybody made a comment to you about dating or romance or love in correlation to body size? I remember being young.
I mean, this stuff starts before we can even remember sometimes. And these ideas are already coming in before we have any built-in filters for saying, what do I think? Right? There's times in our lives when we're just taking in information. We're just accepting the reality of what we see going on.
I remember being in sixth grade and there was somebody in my sixth grade class that was like, you don't have a boyfriend because you're fat. There are times where I think that narrative still plays out in my brain. And if I were thinking, would you take advice from a 12-year-old?
No.
Would you take right? That's
life advice.
Life advice from a 12-year-old. It doesn't mean that it doesn't hurt, but it just doesn't mean that it's true. So, Jana, if a client comes to you and shares this experience with you that a partner has said that they're not attracted to them because of their body size anymore, how do you support them?
So what I would do is I would actually first ask them, like, what's going on here? Like, what was said? What was happening? And how did you take that in?
Mm-hmm.
What message did you receive from what that other person said?
Can you give me an example?
Well, I had a client who said, you know, my partner says they want me to be taking care of myself better, right? And so, first of all, I'm going to acknowledge the pain of whatever they perceive the message to be, because those things are real.
Especially when, right, you exist in a larger body, taking care of myself means, oh, well, you must think that I've gained weight.
Yes. Or that there's something wrong with my body, that I need to be, ooh, doing something different, right? Yeah. That I need you to change. Because that's the messaging we've been getting since, like you're saying, since sixth grade or fifth grade or, yeah, however long is that I need to change this. And, yeah, so I can really take that when I'm with my clients and acknowledging that pain. And then the next step is kind of actually asking them to open it up and see what's going on so that we can start to sort out, was this just the message you got from it? Was this the message your partner was actually trying to send? And if it was the message they're trying to send, what else is going on with them?
I want to emphasize here is that we are not trying to gaslight people. We are not saying that, like, maybe they didn't say what they think that you said. In that example of like, oh, my partner said that you're not taking care of yourself. Maybe they meant you're staying up late at night to read romance books about fat main characters and you're not sleeping. And I'm worried about, you know, you not sleeping enough. But there are plenty of instances where I've had clients point blank have been told, I am not attracted to you anymore. And I think when we think about what else could be going on, it's really more of looking at why is this partner responding in this way? What is going on in their life that is contributing to this? There are so many things. And I also want to just stress, it almost doesn't matter what's going on. It doesn't make it okay. and that you are not responsible for someone's attraction to you, which is so opposite from the messaging that we've been taught. We have been taught that our partner's attraction is our responsibility. Going back to the male gaze and the westernized beauty standard, that our job is to make sure that we are attractive. And I think part of the problem in that, our bodies are changing. From the moment you are born, your body is going to change. And so if the only thing your partner is holding on to in terms of attraction is how you looked when you first met, how many years have passed? How has your body changed? How have you changed since then?
I think that this is such an important point, because when we can kind of explore this, and I want us to think about exploring it, not letting someone off the hook, because I love that you said it's not okay, because that is the truth. But when we can explore another thought besides there's something wrong with me and my body, it can kind of open this up. And even if you're having this experience, which can be painful, it can make it less painful. If you can explore, like, my partner has said this to me, right? What else might be going on? Have they had some changes in stress in their life that might be affecting their ability to be connected, right? That has nothing to do with your body. Do they have some anti-fat bias that is going on? That has nothing to do with your body. Do they have a testosterone level change as they've aged?
Are they taking nothing to do with your body? Are they taking medication? A new medication? Your libido levels have changed. Do you have kids? Have you experienced financial stress? There's so many things that can impact intimacy. And it's a really easy scapegoat to say, oh, I'm just not attracted to your body anymore.
And I think that comes back to, like, and that is not okay.
Yes.
That is not 100% not okay, but it can kind of give you personally this separation, this space from what is happening. It gives you the neutrality back is what happens. So what we want to really emphasize here is changing your body isn't the answer. Because what happens is then you become in this space of where you are constantly chasing a moving target. Mm. I want us to think about this just a little bit through the lens of aging. Everyone's body is going to age.
Yeah.
Right? And as we age, we see a lot of things that we do, and some of them are empowered. Some of them are not empowered. Some of them are out of fear. Like, do I color my hair? Because I'm turning gray, do I color my hair? Right? Yeah. And that can be a really empowered choice to say, yeah, I'm going to do this. That's fine. But also, if it's coming from this place of chasing this target of I'm good enough because the way I look, that's where we kind of want to uncouple those ideas.
I think it goes back to the hair removal. I know that there were seasons of my life where it was like, this hair removal is so important. And now I'm like, I don't care as much. I also know that in our society, you know, I'm thinking about, like, when you look at reality television, how obsessed they are with external beauty and the things that they will do to try to maintain that external beauty. It is fleeting. It is a moving target. It is expensive. And so you can spend and invest and do all of this to try and control and change how you look, or you cannot. But regardless, it doesn't make it okay for someone to project their criticism or their beliefs on you. I want us to consider, what if something else were to have changed in a relationship? I know a lot of clients who really struggled during the 2016 election, when there was a clear separation of party household demographics. How do you move in a relationship? How do you continue to change in a relationship when your beliefs are vastly different? And there's several things that come into play. What we would recommend to somebody who gets this critical feedback, what is the first thing that you're going to recommend somebody do when their partner says that they're unattracted to them?
The first thing that I think we should visit is to determine how you want to or desire to feel in your relationship. What things do I need to have here to make being in this partnership, in this relationship, really work for me?
And I think, as especially as a woman, it's really hard for me to identify what I need, never mind what I want. I think that that's paramount here, is how do I want to feel in my relationship? And I think the other thing that we can do is figuring out the values that I hold as an individual, and then the values that I desire in a relationship. And sometimes there's going to be competing values. So let me give you an example. Let's say you value family, but you also value respect, and you are with your partner and you want to keep your family together, but also your partner is talking negatively about your body and you don't feel respected. These are competing values, and only you can determine how you honor these values.
If we have some competing values when it comes to bodies, you get to have boundaries. You cannot change someone's anti-fat bias, but you can set boundaries when their beliefs are becoming harmful to you. And that is affecting your daily life when they're saying things constantly. You can start to set those boundaries. Now, does that mean that people are always going to respect those boundaries? No. And that's when you're going to have other choices in your life. When somebody truly doesn't respect your boundaries, you might have to look at your values again and pull that out and decide what you're going to do.
When we set boundaries, a boundary crossing is when somebody doesn't know that this is not appropriate. But a boundary violation is when there is a clear boundary and somebody's going to continue to do that. I also think, too, that communication is so important. And as somebody who, I hear the word boundaries and I'm like, I hate setting boundaries. Think about it as communicating what feels good to you and what doesn't. And Jana, even in our working relationship, something that we do is sometimes if we are speaking and maybe something that you say or I say activates you, one of the things that I'll say is, Jana, this is the story I'm telling myself. This is what I heard you say. And you can be like, no, that's not what I meant. This is what I meant. I think that by creating clear communication, it can help create safety, right? Boundaries are meant to keep us safe. Walls are meant to keep people out. And so I think that if we can create safety in our relationship through communication, by not backing down from what we want, I think we can create the relationship that we desire. I want to just end with some hope. If you could leave a message of hope for the people listening to this episode who have partners who have expressed this, what is something that we can leave them with?
I think that all sorts of wonderful functional relationships exist. And I think that these things can be worked through. I really do. I really believe that change is possible and that we can be able to move through some of these things with ourselves and with our partners or just with ourselves. And it just really depends on your situation.
If you're in a partnership where your values do not align with your partner, you get to decide, is this a relationship worth fighting for? Is this a relationship I want to stay in? I used to do a lot of couples counseling. And I remember one of the things people would say to me is, I don't want to break up with my partner because I don't want to be alone. I would often share, I know people in relationships who are lonelier than the people who are single. I think that staying with somebody because you're afraid that there's nobody else, staying with somebody because you don't want to have the hard conversation or because you don't believe that you can find or deserve better, is not a good enough reason to allow someone to speak to you in a way that's harmful. I think that if you can set healthy boundaries and clear expectations, it can allow you to have these really hard conversations with your partner. It doesn't mean you have to break up, but I also want you to be really observant of, why am I fighting for this? Why am I staying in this? Only you can determine what's right for you. And I know that that's not an easy answer. I know that this isn't a prescription of what to do, but I'll sit in the suck with you. I find that if we can create clear boundaries, if we can create clarity, if we can determine what we want in a relationship, I think that this is actually going to help us building our own self-esteem, our own self-efficacy. And this relationship is a microcosm of what is going on in other areas of your life. I also just want to end that as somebody who exists in a large body, I have a lot of friends, I have a lot of clients, and I know a lot of people who are in happy, loving, romantic relationships with partners that they find attractive, whose partners find them attractive, regardless of the body size they started or changed with. It does not mean that it It is not harder for those of us who exist in larger bodies, but it does exist. And here are some things I'm going to recommend that you do. Make a list of every person in your life who you know, who's in a larger body, in a relationship with somebody who loves them. Follow some accounts online. There are people who are out there on the internet who have fat love, and it is beautiful, sweet, and kind, and endearing. It could be everything that we want and more. But I think that when you figure out what you want and what you desire, you get to have that. And you are the best person to be able to secure that. And it's not easy, but it's worth it. And you are worth it. Know that you are worthy of love, belonging, desire, sexual intimacy, all of the above in the body you have right now today. Thanks for joining us today. And until next time.
Hi, friend. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Body Grievers Club. Like all of your other podcasting friends, we would ask that you like, share, subscribe, and give this episode to someone who you think needs to hear it.
We know that grief is tough, but we hope that this podcast helps you feel less alone. To learn more about body grief, check out our Instagram page at the Body Grievers Club.
And to learn how you can work with us today, be sure to check out the link in our show notes for the most up-to-date information.
And remember, friends, no matter how big your body grief is, you're never alone when you're part of the Body Grievers Club.